Live from the campus of Brooklyn College, it is Geek Speak with Ian Levenstein. Ladies and gentlemen, Ian Levenstein.
Hey there, everybody. My name is Ian Levenstein, and welcome to Geek Speak here at SpeakGeekSpeak.com. Happy New Year to all my listeners out there in podcastingville, land, place, village, whatever you want to call it. This is indeed episode 16 of the Geek Speak podcast, first Geek Speak of 2006, and I am glad to be here. This is a pre-recorded episode of Geek Speak. This is not streaming live at the campus of Brooklyn College. It is, of course, recorded live at the campus of Brooklyn College, but there was a rescheduling, and one of the basketball games ended up being rescheduled for Thursday, so I will not be on in my usual 6-7 slot. So instead, I came in a little early. It's about 5 o'clock now on Thursday, and I'll be recording this episode of Geek Speak for all you happy listeners out there who have been awaiting a brand new episode. And you get to get one now. Yay! Woohoo! And I really hope that you guys enjoyed the Showcase Spotlight number 2, which aired in place of a regular episode during the Christmas break. That one was an honor and a privilege to be a part of, and I'd certainly love to thank Robert Welkner of CoinOp TV and Toby Cook, who is NACTech on the Comic Geek Speak forums, for joining me for that podcast. It was a lot of fun. 2 hours of geek talk is always a good thing, and I had a great time doing it, and I hope to do another one in the future. In fact, I'll probably have a brand new one to announce in a couple episodes from now. I'm trying to think up a topic, and I think I might have one, so I'll let you guys know as soon as that comes up, and I'll let you know who my guests will be on that particular episode. I'm thinking the Showcase Spotlights will probably be about every 5 episodes or something like that, or if it were to happen, it might possibly happen every 10, you know, just depending on when I can get people and when I actually come up with ideas. But until then, you'll enjoy regular episodes of Geek Speak, and I'll enjoy producing them, I hope, and I certainly think I shall. But anyway, it's 2006, and I figured since every other podcast is doing this pretty much, everybody's having some sort of year-end roundup. Coverville had their Coverville countdown of 2005. The best covers, I believe it was the top 40 or something along those lines, and Comic Geek Speak just put out their episode 91, which is basically their year in review. So I figured I'd join in on that and give you guys my best, worst, and as of 2005. Now, I'm going to go into a lot of different categories here, basically branching pretty much everything that I talk about on the show, and try and give you my best, my worst, and my as, and possibly even some I told you so's of 2005. And I'm going to try and do straight technology, which would be gadgets and such like that. Obviously, the gaming world. I'm going to do consoles and actual video games. So that'll be a nice variation there. And also, definitely want to get into the side of company blunders and not so blunders, and I'll get into that on the program. And of course, since I do like the retro, I'm going to give you, hopefully, I think it will be the best and worst retro to come out this year. Since I just got done with retro gaming on last week's episode, I'm still sort of fresh in the mind when it comes to that, so I'd love to actually get into that on today's show. And I very well might have some movie reviews at the end of the episode if I have time. If not, I'll schedule that for episode 17. But I'd like to mostly get into a year in review here. And I'm going to start things off on the technology side. And I'll start you off with the best, you know what, I guess I'll start off with the best technological advancement of 2005. And for me, I would have to tell you the best technological advancement of 2005 is probably Apple's switch to Intel, which has not been completed yet, so you can technically call that a best of 2006, but I thought that was a wonderful, wonderful plan for Apple. Now, to switch to Intel makes it easier for them to emulate software which is already being used for Intel chips, and with their technological advancements and their use of specific types of software, they have been able to emulate that almost perfectly. And in secret, OS X has been developed for Intel for a couple of years now. They first came public with it in 2005. And I really think this is going to work really well for Apple. And I've mentioned that in the past, that this could be a very, very good idea here. And obviously, it is going to lead to some hacking. It is going to lead to people using Macintosh software on their Windows machine because, well, Windows uses Intel chips mostly. So most of your Intel machines, with a little bit of hacking here and there, will probably be able to just use an Macintosh OS, which makes me think, and I've mentioned this on previous podcasts, that Macintosh should just bite the bullet and start selling their OSs as separate from the machines. But then again, they make most of their money from that package deal. So it'd be very interesting to see where that goes in the future. But I would call that my best of 2005, the announcement that Macintosh is switching over to the Intel chips. Pretty good move on their part, and I think it will benefit them in the future. Now, for my worst, this is not going to be too much of a stretch here. I mean, those of you who've been following the show know how much I have been harping on this. And my worst technological blooper of 2005, the Sony rootkit scandal. Has to be. Because that was all over the news, it was everywhere, and it led to a giant settlement, which was just settled about a week or so back. Sony has announced that those people who do have these rootkit disks will be able to trade in their disk for either, I believe it's 3 CDs from the iTunes Music Store, or a brand new CD, or possibly 2. I'm not entirely sure on the specifics here. And once again, since I don't have the internet in this room, kind of difficult for me to look it up. But if anybody does indeed know about this, well, send me an email. Do me a favor. But yeah, the Sony rootkit scandal just proved how little certain companies care about the people that are buying their product. They just want to make money. That's it. They want to make sure that they can make money and they can stop you guys from hacking into their software, from hacking into their CDs, and using it for things they don't want you to use it for. In Sony's case, that would obviously be for pirating CDs or making copies of said CDs. This is all because of the copyright protection that was included on these Sony discs. And the Sony DRM basically was being used to fuel this rootkit, which secretly downloaded itself onto a computer, sat there silently, and would broadcast back to Sony what you were doing with your CD drive. If you tried to delete said rootkit, you would lose access to your CD drive. It would basically just be a thing sitting inside your computer that you would just not be able to use. Or if it's an external, it would be an external drive that you just can't use, which was nuts. It was insane. And quite frankly, it was against the law. I mean, they were lying to their customers here. And people do go through these user agreements very quickly. They don't want to have to deal with them. I myself have been a victim of this in the past, and I've said that before also. Not many people take the time to listen to these things because a lot of the times they're so long-winded and hard to actually follow that you just click OK. Or else you'll be sitting there for 20 minutes reading a user agreement, half of which won't mean anything. But hidden inside that user agreement was the information on the Sony DRM and the rootkit that was being installed. Sony lost faith in a lot of people that day, including myself. And as part of this, I think Sony would just be my technological blooper of 2005. Their smear campaign, as it were, to try and get the PSP popular by putting graffiti up in urban neighborhoods that supported the PSP, getting professional graffiti artists to help their cause and put up fake graffiti, which enraged the graffiti industry if you can call it an industry, and enraged fans as well, because that's nuts, you know? Going out there and putting fake graffiti up just to make yourself look good. It doesn't make yourself look good. It makes yourself look terrible in the long run. And when they did that, they proved what sort of company they were. Sony has been having a bad year, had a bad year, and hopefully things will get better come 2006. But like I said, technological blooper, definitely the Sony rootkit. My technological eh of 2005, I didn't really think it was going to be eh at first, you know? Really didn't think it was going to work out that way. But in the end, it sort of did for me. And this is going to shock a lot of my listeners here, but the iPod Video is my eh of 2005. Now, you might be saying, Ian, how could you say that? You get to watch your videos on the iPod now. What's the deal with that? Well, it's as simple as this. It's not even the iPod Video. It's the iPod with video. They gave you the capability to watch certain videos on your iPod, but they had to be either MP4, H.264, or .mov, or you just would not be able to watch them. Okay, so there goes the AVIs, there goes the MPEGs, there goes all of the other forms of videos out there that people have and have had for years. And this includes DVDs that were legitimately purchased and then put onto your computer in AVI form or MPEG-2 form. A lot of people do this legitimately just to have an extra copy of the DVD that you can they can just bring with them. And they wanted to put it on their iPod Video. What they got to do? They first got to convert it. And the conversion process takes hours and hours and hours. I was listening to a episode of the Tech File podcast. And it happened to be their latest live one where they had the Hackpoint 5 guys on. And they told us it takes up to 16 hours to convert Hackpoint 5 into H.264 format. Sometimes even more than that, sometimes 36 hours. Now, the average user at home, when converting a movie, are not going to wait 16 hours for it to happen. It's just not going to work. So they're forced to either go to the torrents or go to the iTunes Music Store. And, okay, granted, the iTunes Music Store has a lot of good stuff now. They have The Office. They've got some Fox shows in there. They've got some Disney stuff. They've got some ABC. But it's still not enough for the average user. Still no movies and stuff like that unless you're going to watch a children's movie. And most people won't be doing that. Simple as that. Unless you're a child, you're probably not going to want to watch Cinderella for the 8th time. You want to get those latest movies. How do you do that? Well, you take your legitimately bought DVD. I'm not saying download the movies, okay? Making that perfectly clear. Your legitimately bought DVD, make yourself your version for the computer, convert it, whatever software you have, and then that's that. But now you got to convert it a specific way in order to play it on the iPod Video. Until the iPod Video gets perfected, and until it can even play all H.264 encodings, because right now, there are certain audio encodings that will not work with H.264. Apple's own process, okay? They created H.264, but certain videos will not work with H.264. You'll get video but no sound, which is just sad. So until that gets better, I'm not going to be able to call the iPod Video a technological advancement. It's getting there, okay? It's certainly something I would consider if they get it a little better. And there have been rumors going around that there might be a successor to the Mac Mini that might be a game system or something along those lines. And there's also been talk of the iPod Shuffle getting replaced by a PSP-type iPod with a long screen and all that. There have been a bunch of rumors going around. And maybe if some of that technology comes, Apple might be able to prove something to me here. But they're the best of 2005 with their choice to go with Intel. And they're the eh of 2005 with the iPod Video. Show me something better, folks. Seriously, show me something better. And then maybe by 2006 is over, then maybe you'll be the best as well. I don't know. Now, I'm trying to think, is there an I told you so in the world of technology that I'd be able to say for 2005? And, well, I don't think I've been around long enough to really do an I told you so here. And I'm trying to think of one offhand. Well, I I guess I could tell you the I told you so with the iPod video, but then again, I got that wrong in the first place. I originally said there was not going to be an iPod video, and, well, I was wrong. But I also told you that there were a lot of problems with the iPod video and that people should watch out, and, well, it's not quite the player that it should be yet, in my mind. Okay, other people might say differently, and if you are going to say differently, please let me know, send me an email, angry or otherwise, and I'll certainly be happy to answer it. But just, to me, it needs improvement. So that's the technological side of 2005, and plenty of other great technological advancements of 2005, but this is my best and my worst. And again, also, if anybody out there has their own list that they put together that they want to send me through email, whether it be audio or regular email, please don't hesitate to do so. You know, let me know what you think of my list, and let me know if you have your own, because, well, that's what lists are all about, right? Get the information out there and let people debate it. So there's my technological stuff for 2005. And now, after a nice musical interlude, over to the gaming side. So if there's one thing that had more advancements than any other aspect of geekdom in 2005, I would really have to say it is gaming. In fact, so much so that I'm splitting gaming up into two separate sections. First, I'll talk about the consoles, then I'll talk about the games themselves. Now, for my best of 2005... I'm going to have to go with an announcement, and again, there's no concrete stuff yet because, well, there's only been demos and stuff like that, but my best of 2005, okay? And again, this is going to shock you also, probably. The announcement of the Nintendo Revolution and their revolutionary controller. I'll let that sink in for a second there because I haven't really talked about that much on the show. You know, I had my one episode where I announced all the stuff that came out through E3, and haven't really gotten too much into it since then. But I really like where this controller is going. You know, as I see more and more about it, there hasn't really been a video game revolution in a long time now. Everything's been exactly the same. You know, everybody goes out there with pretty much similar-looking controllers, similar-looking games, games that can be played on pretty much any system, and not too much change, you know? I actually blame the success of stuff like PlayStation, and even go farther back than that, Nintendo, on this situation. Because once Nintendo came out with their controller, their nice little square controller, the original Nintendo controller, people have tried to come up with a similar gaming aspect. TurboGrafx-16. Sega Genesis. Sega Saturn, Sony PlayStation, Sony PlayStation 2, Xbox, not really too many innovations there. Sure, graphics got better, gameplay got better, yeah, I know, but everything was pretty much exactly the same. And now here's the Nintendo Revolution coming out with a chance to change things for the first time since, well, their first system came out. Nintendo was revolutionizing things yet again. Now, once 2006 comes around, and once we actually get a chance to play the Nintendo Revolution, maybe I'll think differently here. Like, maybe it'll be a total flop. Maybe it just won't work. But I love the idea of the motion sensors, the controller moving with you, basically. I love that concept. And I really think it's going to work out. I really hope it's going to work out. Because I don't want to be eating crow here. You know, that's the worst thing for a guy like me, you know? I got a podcast here. If I'm seriously wrong, well, I'm going to be laughing at myself. But the Nintendo Revolution certainly looks like a good idea right now. And it's been announced that it's going to be much less, or at least somewhat less, money than the Xbox 360 was. It's been guaranteed by the guys at Nintendo that it'll be less than $299. Now, I'd love to see a system for like $100. That'd be great for me. There have been rumors around that it might be as cheap as that. Come on, I mean, that's the price of like two Xbox 360 games. If you're lucky. Because those can go for like $60, which will get you like $130. But the Nintendo Revolution certainly looks like a great idea. The fact that it'll play old Nintendo games on it, NES, SNES, N64, and GameCube, sounds good to me. And that is definitely my console gaming feat for 2005, the best of. Now, here's my worst of. And yeah, you probably saw this coming. You definitely saw this coming. If you've been a listener to the show, and this might be my own personal bias here, but I'm going to give the worst to the Xbox 360. Yeah, that's right. The most popular gaming system in America, I'm giving the worst to. This might be a bit out there for me, but please, hear me out first. Now, the Xbox 360 was a good idea in practice. And it does have plenty of great things about it. You know, the graphics are amazing. Does have some great games out there. Perfect Dark. Heard King Kong's supposed to be pretty good. The new Madden's certainly looking amazing. But it's missing a couple things, as I've mentioned in the past. But way, way, way too many flaws with the Xbox 360. Okay? Number one, and the worst out of everything, is that you can't stand your Xbox 360 up without scratching it. Oh my dear God. Your discs will come out mangled if you're going up to get a soda and accidentally bump the table with your Xbox 360 on and it moves ever so slightly. Their explanation? Oh, it was never meant to be vertical. Come on! You kidding me? It stands up perfectly fine. It looks like a system that can be played either horizontal or vertical, just like the PlayStation 2 was. Certainly not the Xbox, because, oh my dear God, that thing was like a lead weight. If you didn't put it down, you would kill yourself. But the Xbox 360 should not have had this problem offhand. Number two, the blue screens of death. Right out of the box, they say it was only about 3%. I beg to differ. They say only 3% of the systems had this problem, but I've been hearing a lot about these issues. They say that they're going to fix them, but so be it. Is, of course, the situation with the blue screens of death. You do not want a system that doesn't work out of the box, you know? There's certain games that just will blue screen your system on a regular basis. And I love the fact that you get to use blue screen with things other than computers now, you know? For years there, it was, you know, oh, no, I got a blue screen of death. What am I going to do with my computer? Now it's, oh, no, I got a blue screen of death. What am I going to do with my game system? That's not a good place to go either. You know, it's, I don't know. I mean, plenty of great things about the Xbox 360, but make yourself better, okay? And number three, this is the biggest for me, okay? The decision to go with regular DVDs for the games, as opposed to HD DVDs, is the biggest flop of them all. Xbox says they have this program that will be able to basically crunch down the size of a game so that it'll only fit on maybe one or two DVDs. Sort of like a zip program for gaming. They say it's going to work. They say it's going to be amazing. They say it's going to happen. But not a lot of companies actually have the software to work with yet, and it hasn't been perfected. So right now, we're looking at certain games that once they come out might be up to three DVDs in size. Okay, I thought these days were over. I seriously did. I really thought these days were over. I thought the days of, you know, having three or four CDs for a game were over. And now it's happening with DVDs. Are you kidding me? Xbox had the chance. Xbox 360 had the chance to choose HD DVD, and they thought it was not going to work. Well, you can tell they're eating crow already, because they've already announced, and get ready for this, for those of you who haven't heard it, they've already announced an external DVD drive that is going to play HD DVDs, okay? sound like a computer to you? Yeah, that's Microsoft for you. They're going to have an external HD DVD player that'll be able to work with your Xbox. It's crazy, you know? Gaming peripheral like that. I mean, hello, it's the Sega CD all over again. That didn't exactly work out too well. So Microsoft needs a lot of work here to get themselves back on the list of best and not worst. I'm seriously seeing a Dreamcast-type scenario here of things really looking good at first, and then as you look into it, discovering that there's a lot that needs to be improved or else things will be dead. Although it does amuse me that a Dreamcast game just came out in Japan, so I guess the Dreamcast isn't completely dead, but still, Xbox 360, please work on yourself and get yourself off my worst list. Now, the of 2005, for me at least, the Nintendo DS. And it's slowly working itself off the list, by the way. It's getting there day by day. Because with the first announcement of a online MMORPG that's coming out in Japan that'll be out here in the States from the looks of things also, will improve things a lot, hopefully. But my main problem with the Nintendo DS is that it hasn't really proven to me yet that it's more than just a gimmick. I mean, there's a couple of games out there that actually use the second screen well, but then there's the games that just have a map or something like that, you know? It's not exactly innovative or creative. It's like these games could have very well been on the Game Boy SP or something like that. Use that second screen. Use it for good. And then maybe, just maybe, the Nintendo DS will actually impress me a little bit. I have friends with DSs. I've heard good things about certain games. Like, on the Showcase Spotlight, Toby recommended the new Sonic game for me, which hopefully a friend of mine will get and I'll be able to actually try out. But because I don't actually have the system, I have a bias here of it just really seeming very gimmicky to me. And again, this might very well change once I actually get a chance to get my hands on it a little more. I tried it out when a friend of mine first got it. My buddy Chris got the DS pretty much when it first came out through her job. And the Mario game looked good, but there were still a lot of problems with it, for me at least. It was very hard to handle. And even though it was pretty much a perfect port of Mario 64, it just seemed a bit lacking to me. And then the other games that came out too, there have been a couple of great games, and then there have been plenty of flops for the DS. But hopefully as time goes on, things will change themselves a little bit. Because like I said, it's looking better. The scope of it's looking better. PSP has been dominating the US and Japan as well for a while. Although Japan has a lot of Nintendo DSs out there. In fact, probably more than the US has. But it still needs to gain that market share a little more. Once Mario Kart came out, things started to change a little bit for the DS, and it's actually been gaining a lot more popularity. I believe it sold 1 million units or something along those lines recently, which was a good thing for them. But it's still sort of for me. Might change in the next couple of months even. If it does, you'll see myself correcting myself. So yeah, there we have it. Best of 2005, Nintendo Revolution. Worst of 2005, the setup of the Xbox 360. Not the system itself, but what the system has inside it. You know, not the games. I'm not saying anything about the games here. Just the way they put it out. It really looks like a rush job to me. And the external HD DVD drive certainly proves that, to me at least. And the would be the Nintendo DS. PSP, PlayStation 3, obviously honorable mentions for best. But haven't really seen enough of that yet to actually prove anything. Which is funny because I put the Nintendo Revolution up there and haven't seen a lot too. But I think it's just because of the controller that really makes me think it's going to be the technological advancement that gaming really needs. For consoles, it's sort of more announcements-wise that got me in 2005. Them coming out in 2006, well, we'll see where things go. So there's the consoles. Next up, the games. So now here we are for the best games of 2005. And the worst, and the eh. I think I'll even go I told you so with this. Now, best game of 2005. I think I might actually have a couple of games I'm going to mention here. There isn't just one best for me. And again, there's going to be some stuff on here that I'm sure people will disagree with because, well, me mostly being a PlayStation guy, I've only really had the experience to see PlayStation games. Seen a couple other games here and there, and actually there is going to be one game on the list that I've seen and looked absolutely outstanding that I have to put on the list for me. Quake 4. That's the first one I'm going to mention. The game that I really haven't had a chance to play too much, but from what I've heard from other people, from what I've seen graphics-wise and gameplay-wise from a couple of videos here and there, amazing, amazing gaming experience. Quake 4 did everything that Quake fans wanted it to do and more. Improvements, gameplay back to basics, from what I've heard from people, a little more like Quake 2. And good improvements. Not too many negatives to say about Quake 4. So for PC gamers, that was great for them. Now for consoles, for me, I'm going to have to go with a game that is just so freaking addictive. Once you pick it up, you can't stop. And here we go. I'm getting ready for it.
Warriors!
Oh yeah. It's a very different type of game. There hasn't been a game based on a movie like this in a long time. Because the movie came out back in the 70s. Which is a totally different experience. It's very, very different indeed. But with Warriors also, they made sure that it wasn't just the movie. They made advancements on it as well. They did backstory-wise. They went months before the movie actually started and tried to make themselves a full gaming experience. And they did the job. You know, I never thought it would be fun to graffiti things. And Warriors really proved me wrong. Never thought it would be fun to beat up on old ladies either. And, well, Grand Theft Auto proved that, but, what are you going to do? So Warriors, another one of my bests. Because you got to go multiple bests when it comes to gaming, because it's hard to just pick one. Another best for me, Burnout Revenge. Improvements, not too many major changes that didn't actually improve the gameplay. Only one that made it a bit too easy, and that's being able to smash into the cars in front of you and not get killed, but it's still incredibly fun to do so. Love the swing meter when it comes to crash mode, and it's certainly a nice improvement there. And I believe I have one more on the bests, and that's going to be We Heart Katamari. Because we really do. Again, took most of the stuff that was great about Katamari Damacy and just improved upon it. That's really all they had to do. It's a fun gaming experience, one that I just love doing over and over and over again. And I wouldn't want to change anything about the game. It's interesting, too, because it's as addictive as the first one was. And you get to play it with two players also, which adds a lot to the gaming experience. So that's the last best I'll mention for games. Now here's the worst. And I think first on that list is going to be a big disappointment for me. And that is the Fantastic Four game that came out that was based on the movie not on the comic book. Gameplay, very clunky. Okay? Graphics weren't even too good, in my opinion. And it felt like it was a rush job to try and get out by the time the movie came out. I mean, nice try, but just really did not do the job. For me, at least. That's going to be one of my worsts. Because also, I'm a comic guy. And I'm going to get into comics also as soon as I'm done talking about this, my best and worst and ass of 2005 from that. Now, other worsts of 2005, when it comes to gaming, I have to mention this one because it broke my heart. Shadow the Hedgehog. Oh my dear God. What were you thinking, Sonic Team? You know, giving a hedgehog an Uzi is not a good idea for people who have been following it for a long time, you know? And it wasn't even really too much of Shadow's character there from what we've known about the character since he's been introduced. It was a stupid idea, and Sonic Team is paying for it. The controller might be really fun. From the looks of things, it looks like it's actually really well made, but the game itself sucks ass. I would not recommend this to your worst enemy, okay? That's how adamant I am about Shadow the Hedgehog. Big mistake on the part of Sonic Team. And I really hope they correct the mistake with the next few Sonic games out there. Because like I heard, Sonic Riders is supposed to be pretty interesting, so who knows. But Shadow, oh, why? Why? Bleh. That's all I have to say about that. And another one that I'm going to mention here. Actually, you know what? I think I'm going to move on to the S, because I think this is more eh than anything. And the first one I'm going to have to mention is Capcom Fighting Jam. Because Capcom Fighting Jam was not exactly good. And apologies if this is a 2004 game. I think it came out in 2005. But I could be wrong here. Just still, I mean, I like to see Capcom come out with new games and not rehash their old ones. But they're really good at rehashing their old ones, as they've proven time and time again. They can't come up with new ideas anymore. It's like they're stuck with their fighting games. Another one that I'm going to put on there, another fighting game, KOF Maximum Impact, is just not too good. I mean, it's taking KOF into the 3D world, which is something that I guess had to be done, but it just really doesn't do too well. It doesn't hold up very well. And I mean, I hope with sequels and stuff like that, it might actually turn out to be a really good game. But for now, yeah, not so much. I mean, like I said, who knows? With time, that might change, but the first one that came out, no. Definitely no. I'll put that in the heck no file. And not really too many I told you so's with the gaming world either that I can think of offhand that weren't already mentioned. But as an honorable mention, I'm going to put the latest Donkey Konga on there. Because that game is fun, you know? I mean, being able to use bongos with a game system sounds like a gimmick, and it is, but it's a fun gimmick. And fun gimmicks are, well, fun, you know? Bad gimmick, giving Shadow an Uzi. Good gimmick, giving Donkey Kong bongos. It's fun. It's fun, and I enjoyed it, and it's a great party game. So I'll put that on as an honorable mention. So there's my side of things when it comes to the gaming world. And now, for another side that I completely love, that I'll have to get into, is, of course, the comic world. Oh, yeah. After comics, we'll go to movies, and if we have time, retro. I love comics. I've made this perfectly clear ever since I started this show back in September. I love comics. That'll never change either. I mean, even if I stop collecting someday, which I doubt will really happen, like maybe if anything, I'll only collect a couple of books, but I love the genre. Always have. Ever since I started in junior high, I've been addicted. And a lot has happened in the comic world in 2005. But only one can be considered the best of 2005. And this is pretty much a given for most people out there. But my best for 2005 has to be, no question on this one, Prelude to Infinite Crisis and Infinite Crisis. Because DC did something that is incredibly hard to do with the Infinite Crisis. It set up a prelude that made sense, that didn't feel like filler, that added to the story, and then led in to the main crisis. It's one thing to set up a book, but to go leaps and bounds beyond that and create interesting, compelling stories that you know will actually mean something in the scheme of things, that is outstanding. And DC has done the job. Geoff Johns and my buddy Phil Jimenez, great work on Infinite Crisis. Issue 3 just came out. Yet another cliffhanger. Perfect. It's like watching a television show, a great television show. Sort of like how I feel about Why the Last Man, which is another great of 2005, but it's been around for a while, so I'll leave that as an honorable mention. But Infinite Crisis, every issue ends with that great cliffhanger that you know you'll be salivating over until the next issue comes out. Like, I can't believe that I have to wait another 2 or 3 weeks until Infinite Crisis comes out because I love it just so much. You know, it's great for a comic fan because it plays on past continuity that you really didn't expect to see again in the comic world. And best of all, it makes sense. You know, it's not just going out of left field. It's not just bringing people back for the sake of bringing people back. You know, this is stuff that had to really happen. And Infinite Crisis is a perfect sequel to Crisis on Infinite Earths, which happened back in the 80s and still has meaning today. And Infinite Crisis is going to prove that you can do an event right. A crossover can be done right, folks. Infinite Crisis proves that. Marvel, you should really listen to this. It's a great idea. It really is. Now, for my worst of 2005 when it comes to comics, see, this is a tough one. This is a tough one here because, well, I love comics. I haven't read a lot of bad ones. But I guess for me, the worst comic moment that I'll have out there for you is a book that I thought was going to be really, really good when I picked it up. And then as soon as I picked it up, wasn't really too impressed. I mean, I had heard good things about it, but I think the writer, and the writer's Bruce Jones, fell into his old patterns way too quickly. And that's Vigilante. Vigilante, it's an interesting story. It's just, where is it going? You know? Like, it's interesting in the bad way. Because you're interested because you don't know where the hell this thing's going. Like, why does this exist? And this is not the character of Vigilante that most people probably know from their history of DC Comics, you know? This dude seems to be like a cold-blooded killer. Which is interesting, but it's not Vigilante. You know, I hate it. I absolutely hate it when people take a character's name and create a brand new character out of it. You know, I mean, at least be creative and make a character that at least is different. And different because his name is different too. You know, like, I'll give you for example, Scorpion, okay? Scorpion for years has just been a villain for Spider-Man. And now all of a sudden, it's a girl whose mother works for the Hydra organization in Marvel Comics. I love the character Scorpion. I also love the female Scorpion, but I would have loved for her to have a different name, because that's very confusing and not exactly too creative either, you know? But, what are you going to do? But Vigilante, It's like everything I hate about comics. And it's funny, too, because I liked Bruce Jones' original work on The Hulk. But since then, oh, God. It's like by the end of his run on Hulk, I had no idea what the hell was happening. And I really think he should just stick to novels and just get away from comics for a while because he's lost his way. He really has. Vigilante, the story is not... It just doesn't grasp me. And there might be people out there who have a very different take on this, but Vigilante for me is probably the worst. I couldn't get past the second issue. I just had to put it down. Now, while Vigilante is a comic book that I might just not see the point of, then, of course, there's one comic that really should not exist. And the fact that it does makes me want to cry every single time I see it in a back issue bin. Oh my God. It's like, Marvel, what are you doing to yourself? I have a feeling most of my listeners probably know what I'm talking about already, but it's, of course, Rob Liefeld's run on X-Force. He had a miniseries this year where he went and, for no reason whatsoever, took Cable, took Cannonball, took Shatterstar, took the rest of the cast of X-Force, and put them together and faced this time-traveling villain dude that had nothing to do with anything, and drew it also, which was even worse, and made crap. Made absolute crap. Made crappity crap, 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 crap. There's no other way to put it. Rob Liefeld, you should be banned from comics. Your run on Teen Titans is the only issue of the new Teen Titans run I did not pick up. I picked up the first issue. After the second, I couldn't pick up the second issue. No. Even if Gail Simone was writing, I could not pick it up because you suck, Liefeld. You are terrible. Stop working in comics. Please, do the Todd McFarlane. Go do something else. X-Force was dreadful. If anybody picked it up, I'm sorry. I really am. Not my fault. Not my fault. That's all I have to say. Just Rob Liefeld, please, don't ever come back to X-Force again. Let these characters be. Cable's a different character now than he was when you created him. Cannonball, cool character. I like him where he is. I just don't like anybody in your hands. And that just definitely had to be mentioned as one of the worst of 2005. Ugh. Gosh. What were you thinking, Marvel? My aunt of 2005, I'm going to have to go with House of M. Because House of M was a series, a miniseries, that was 8 issues long that really felt like it should have been 6 or maybe even 4. I mean, there was some good stuff that happened in it. I liked the characterization. I liked the anger and the frustration in it and all that. But there was an entire issue where it literally took them an entire issue to, like, revive Emma Frost. And that's it. That was an entire issue. Brian Michael Bendis has gone on record to say that he actually wrote the last issue of House of M. He wrote the last 2 issues, that is, of House of M, before writing the middle issues, because he knew how he wanted it to end. And in the process, he created 2 issues that were complete filler. That's all they were. They didn't add to the story. It was just padding. That's all it really was. I mean, I liked a lot of the stuff in House of M. It just, none of the miniseries really connected with the actual series, which I was looking for. I was looking for some sort of connection. I was looking for a reason to buy them. I liked the Fantastic Four one and the Spider-Man one. The Iron Man one wasn't exactly my cup of tea. I don't think it was anybody's cup of tea. And it just really did not feel the way that I thought it was going to feel. And I don't know if it was worth the money. It would have been nice of me to just, you know, pick up issues 1 through 4 and then pick up 7 and 8. At least that's my take on it. And that's why I'm going to have to put House of M in the category for comics. I mean, nice try, Brian Michael Bendis, but I think you should shy away from the whole major crossover thing for a while. You do much better when you're localized. Your Daredevil is superb. I loved your Pulse. I loved your Alias before that. I love your Ultimate Spider-Man. I even liked your Ultimate X-Men. But none of those really crossed over with anything. I think once he gets into the major crossovers, he doesn't exactly know how to write them properly. Which is why I'm going to have to give House of M an A. I mean, better luck next time. For all I know, the Illuminati and the Civil War stuff could prove to be very beneficial. And I mean, some of the Decimation stuff I'm liking afterwards. I like Generation M, and I also am enjoying the other book that came out recently, Son of M, which follows Quicksilver. But the actual miniseries really could have been two issues lighter. And also, releasing the last issue the same day that Infinite Crisis comes out, come on, that was no coincidence. You're not fooling anybody, seriously. And also, to give away a bit of a spoiler here, so if you haven't read X-Men, you know, you can just skim through this. One of the main parts, and one of the most sad parts of the House of M series is when everybody wakes up in the last issue, and one of the people who doesn't have powers anymore is an original X-Man, Iceman. Iceman didn't have his powers anymore. I'm like, oh my God, I love Bobby Drake. How could you take away his powers? Well, three issues later, in the series of X-Men, he has him back. I mean, dear God, are you kidding me? His powers were quote-unquote repressed, which left me and other fans just really wondering how. How could that possibly be? So, the ramifications aren't sticking, which is a major problem with a lot of Marvel storylines. A lot of comic storylines, period. So maybe if time goes on, and I've said this pretty much about all my as so far, maybe as time goes on, I'll have a different opinion on this, but for now, House of M really needs a lot of work and isn't even close to as good as Infinite Crisis. So, of course, another thing that I have to mention is movies, because I have done a couple of movie reviews here on Geek Speak, and I'm a movie guy. I certainly am. So, I'm going to do my best and worst and eh of 2005 when it comes to movies. And right away, no shock to you, there is a draw when it comes to the best movies I've seen of 2005. And that, of course, is Sin City and Batman Begins. Amazing, amazing transitions from the comic world into the movie world. Sin City is perfect. Almost bit by bit, exactly how it played out in the comic, translated over into the movies. Probably the best comic movie of all time when it comes to that. And Batman Begins took the mythos of Batman and made it fun again. It made the bat nipples disappear in people's minds, which is a good thing, because, oh my freaking God, was that a bad movie. Bat nipples, George Clooney, ugh. But Christian Bale did a great job as Batman, did a great job as Bruce Wayne as well, and proved that not everything's dead in the Bat universe, especially when it comes to the movies, which is a major, major plus for the fans, and has been for a long time now. Now, when it comes to the bad, there's only one movie that I can put on this list. And there might be some people who disagree, but only because of quite possibly the worst last 6 minutes of a movie I've ever seen in my life, War of the Worlds. Oh my freaking God. That ending was such a cop-out. Steven Spielberg cannot write a good ending anymore, you know? He starts off pretty interesting, and then things just completely fall apart. And there were some inconsistencies in that movie as well. Like, there's no trains that go anywhere near where that flaming train went past Tom Cruise and his kids. And most of all, which ties into the terrible ending, how the hell did his son survive? That shouldn't have happened. It's movie magic that he survived, which didn't feel real to me at all. And the explanation at the end, while it might have been the book and all that, you got to make it a little better than that. There was no hint at all as to how they were going to make the aliens die. I mean, everybody knew it was going to be because of germs because, well, everybody's seen more of the worlds, the original, or heard it, or have read the book. And, I mean, I knew it, but they didn't mention it at all until the last 6 minutes of the movie. They have Morgan Freeman do a voiceover. That's how they explain it? Are you kidding me? No, it doesn't fly. Steven Spielberg, Munich better be better than this. That's all I'm saying. Because you failed with War of the Worlds. And the movie? Fantastic Four. It's good, but not good enough. Just like its game. You know, it had some great parts, but the whole Dr. Doom thing was probably the downfall of the movie for me. Because Dr. Doom is not a megalomaniacal billionaire. He's not Tony Stark, okay? He's not an evil, drunken Tony Stark. No, he's not. He's Dr. Doom. He runs Latveria. That's what he is. And he also doesn't have any special powers. He's Dr. Doom. He wears a suit, and that suit gives him his powers. It's a mechanical suit. It's like Iron Man. Iron Man's just a guy outside the suit, just like Dr. Doom is just a deformed dude outside the suit. That's the way things were supposed to go. And they didn't. And that was not exactly too perfect for me there. Now, honorable mentions, 40-Year-Old Virgin, best comedy I've seen in a long time, hilarious movie, and The Corpse Bride, because that was very fun, and a typical Tim Burton movie, and also Willy Wonka, because I enjoyed that a lot. So those are my honorable mentions there. And when I come back from this musical break, I'm going to combine two things into one here, as I look at the clock here and see it's almost at the hour mark. So I'm going to quickly run through some retro, best and worst. And then, of course, as my wind-up for today, I will do the sports side of things. So since it's about that time, I'll play my wind-up music. It's wind-up time here on GeekSpeak, where I switch over from the geek side of things over to the sports side of things, and today will be my best and worst and moments in sports. Now, the best moment for me has to be a moment that was not too long ago, but I would have to say the best moment, the Chicago White Sox winning the World Series. I mean, that was amazing. Absolutely outstanding. Great performance from the beginning of the season until the end. Chicago White Sox proved that this was their year. They hadn't won it in pretty much as long as the Red Sox hadn't won it. And it was about damn time, you know? See, I'm a Yankees fan, but even I know Yankees can't win it every year. I'm kind of glad that they haven't won the past couple of years because, well, then you get to see other teams shine. The White Sox shined. Good for them, honestly. I really hope that they continue to be a great team because they deserve it. They did an amazing job during the season and an amazing job in the playoffs, an amazing job in the World Series, and they deserve it. Another best for you. I'll do the football best. Got to be the Indianapolis Colts. I mean, what a season. They might not have gone undefeated, but Peyton Manning proved he's the best damn quarterback in the league, no question about it. I mean, day in and day out, they would go in there and they would crush their opponents, period. for a while there, they had about like 70 points combined and the other team had like 20 or something. Great defense, great offense, great performance period. And I hope they do a great job in the playoffs as well, because I would love to see Manning versus Manning in the Super Bowl. That might be me just, you know, projecting my Giant fanness onto the league, but I'd love to see it. I'm sure their dad would probably have some problems with that, but eh, what are you going to do? My worst? There's only one worst that there could possibly be. My worst is definitely Rafael Palmeiro. You're a liar, you're a cheater, and I hope you get what you deserve, which is never playing in sports ever again. Because you deserve that. You really do. And my eh would have to be the return of hockey. Because even though I'm glad it's back, I haven't really done too much yet, hockey. And the Rangers are failing right now, too, so that makes me feel kind of eh. And hasn't really been too much buzz yet. Maybe it'll come as time goes on, but right now, hockey is still sort of in limbo. And obviously, another bad would be the Knicks, but I'm not going to get into them. I don't want to depress myself. Quick retro best and worst for you here. Best retro moment, got to be the brand new Grand Theft Tendo, even though it hasn't come out yet officially. I love the idea, and I love the great retro movement in it to bring Grand Theft Auto onto the Nintendo. The worst will have to be Sonic Gems Collection, because, like I said in the last Retro Gaming Showcase Spotlight, you don't put Knuckles Chaotix on it, you're basically alienating a whole bunch of Sonic fans, and that's what they did for me. Pretty much as they did with Shadow. And not really too much of an eh there, because I like retro gaming. And I think that's where I'll end this episode as I look at the clock here. So, there you have it. There's my best and worsts of 2005, and my eh haven't really been too much I told you so's, because I didn't really need them. It's more for sports. And by the way, if you like that wind up, here's the pitch. Every single Monday from 3 to 4, beginning in late January, you'll be able to hear myself, Jason Green, Joey Mags, and the rest of the bunch on the Sporting Goods. The email address for GeekSpeak is speakgeekspeak@gmail.com. That's speakgeekspeak@gmail.com. You can head to the forums at speakgeekspeak.com/forums. And, of course, it's a brand new month, so go ahead and vote for me on Podcast Alley. That'd be really, really super of you. Anyway, I'm going to head out here because I got a basketball game to call. So until next week, my name is Ian Levenstein. Have a great week. Enjoy your geek and definitely enjoy your 2006. I hope everybody had a great 2005. I certainly did. I'm really glad I created this podcast during 2005, and I hope the podcast and myself and all my listeners have a great 2006 as well. This is Ian Levenstein. Take care, everybody. If anybody does perhaps. So there's my technological stuff one more on the bests, and that's going to be caught up. Oh, God. We'll be right back. It's time to speak geek with the geeks. Gaming, tech, news, and more here on Geek Speak. Thursdays from 6 to 7 on Brooklyn College Radio, 1090 AM, and streaming on the web at brooklyncollegeradio.org. Let's geek out, everybody.